Chapter 12. The Great Flood. I did not speak to my guardian until after I had unbent the sign as best I could, rehung it, and given the owner a shilling. "What on earth was that all about?" I asked as calmly as I could. An unoccupied hansom went by, but Sidney Grice made no attempt to hail it.
"Did you not understand any of it?"
He set off in the opposite direction to home.
"At your suggestion, Miss Bocking contacted me by letter to request that I attend her house to—"
"I am not a complete idiot," I cut in.
"Work in progress."
He unscrewed the handle of his cane. "I am talking about the way you marched out of that poor woman's house before she even had a chance to tell you what had happened to her."
"First, I hardly marched," he protested. "If you can strain your memory all the way back to 6 1/3 minutes ago, I actually crept from that frighteningly herbaceous, vitreous construction through that revoltingly tasteful sitting room."
"That is not the point."
"Second, Miss Bocking did not give the impression of being poor, though she might be, and if you have information to that effect, perhaps you would like to divulge it. I do not have poor clients."
He reinserted the handle upside down. "I meant poor in the sense of unfortunate."
"A strange interpretation,"
my godfather mused,
"since the poor are not unfortunate."
He clipped on his pince-nez to look at a dial on his modified stick.
"They are lazy. Just as I thought."
"What?"
"According to my new barometer, Grosvenor Square is 1 foot lower than marked on the 1879 Ordnance Survey map. We are sinking into the sea, March."
His tone implied that he thought I might have something to do with it. "Thank heavens I invested in the Trafalgar Square Gondola Company," I quipped to a blank stare. Mr. G. reassembled his cane.
"I think we have waited long enough."
"For what?"
"Look and listen."
I did both. "What?" I repeated when I became bored, which happened very quickly.
"This is my city,"
he declaimed.
"London in all its grandeur and its filth. This heaving heap of magnificent, squalid, stinking avarice that rules the world's oceans and vast swathes of its unsatisfactory continents. Countless millions are enthralled to us, March. And what do you see?"
I surveyed the bustling traffic and watched a pigeon land on top of a policeman's helmet. "Nothing unusual."
"Excellent."
Sidney Grice clapped his gloved hands together.
"I shall forge a detective yet from the shabby material with which you present me. And what do you make of your observation?"
The policeman shooed the pigeon away. "Nothing," I said, and he frowned.
"You should always make something of everything, but, forgive me, I am overtaxing your feminine brain."
He twirled round.
"Look about you, March. We are not even being followed. Do you not find that rather strange?"
I stepped to the curb and hailed a cab. "But to the best of my knowledge, we have never been followed." The hansom pulled alongside.
"Precisely."
Mr. G. leapt aboard and held open the flap for me.
"And what could be more normal than that? Yet it is in the ordinary that the most extraordinary events are to be discovered. That is Grice's sixth law, and therefore immutable."
He raised his voice.
125 Gower Street, driver."
"Drop me off at Gosling Lane," I called. Our driver was bareheaded and wore no coat or neckerchief, and I envied him that, and the breeze that he must be enjoying on his lofty perch.
"Gosling?"
He tossed his hands.
"That's not on my way."
"It is now," I asserted, and he yanked his horse's head to the left.
"Miss Hockaday?"
Sidney Grice inquired. "Yes," I replied, and he edged away from the rim of my new blue bonnet, which was brushing embarrassingly against that of his old soft felt hat.